This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book title is The Eagle in Green Man's Clearing. And joining me from near Houston, Texas, is the author, A.L. O'Connor. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Thank you.
This is a fascinating book of over 440 pages. You had a life...
421 pages.
Really?
It wasn't quite that long.
Not quite that long. All right. Well, it shows up as a pretty ambitious work at any rate. You have had a life-altering experience that caused you to become an author. What was the motivation behind writing this book?
Well, it took a life-altering disease, multiple sclerosis, which made me stop and write. To be frank, I always wanted to be a writer, but I never found the time or always had excuses. And it wasn't until I got MS that I started writing, and surprisingly, I loved it. Now, before I was a recruiter in the oil and gas industry, recruiting geologists and engineers, I also was very active, and I ran, rode bikes, had a horse, walked my dogs every night, swam at every opportunity, but then MS happened. So now I write books.
Phenomenal.
I write novels. I've got a sequel already complete. I've got the third halfway finished, and the fourth, the plot outline is done. So I've also published short stories. I've got five of them, Dissolution of Assets in two different journals. Unknown Empire and Tainted Seafoam are my horror stories. Agnes's Song is my little romance. And Problem with Long-Distance Relationships, which is my favorite, is sci-fi.
Incredible. You have mentioned that you had always wanted to be an author and decided to write this particular novel. How would you describe it? What is the way this book comes together, and who's your audience? Who do you think will find this interesting?
Ooh, everybody. An enormous amount of people that would be finding it interesting, like anybody with historic or historical fiction, because it is factual. Anybody with fantasy, because it's got a little bit of fantasy. Unfortunately, with the Druids, they only have oral history, and the history is tainted with mistakes because it was repeated down through two millennia. So it wasn't, and the only written was done by Roman historians. And they had their own prejudices. So what I did was I made an author's decision to include prophetic dreams and appearances of spirits. So there is fantasy. Now, if you prefer romance, it's in there. There's romance between Quintus and Adana, romance between Follo and Maeve, Banderas and Eilish, and Titus and Anya. And then there's Lovers of Mysteries, because it has a corpse that Quintus finds, and he has to figure out what happened, so they spend the rest of the time searching for clues. So there's all those people.
Phenomenal. Now, the title is interesting and maybe a little confusing to someone just walking by in a bookstore and might see the title, The Eagle in Green Man's Clearing. Share a little bit about that title.
Sure. The eagle stands for, the eagle is Rome. The eagle bearing or standard, which is what each legion had a eagle with its wings outspread. So there's the eagle. Now, Green Man's Clearing is where the Samhain ceremony takes place and where this murder takes place. So it's the weird, unknown Samhain ceremony.
The setting then is really a great distance back in history when this story, this novel, this adventure takes place. It's a combination of fact and fiction that you have weaved together in this hopefully unforgettable novel. Now, what do you want the readers to take away from this work when they read it? What is the thing that's going to stick out in their mind, do you think?
Oh, I want them to stick out that the Roman Empire was brilliant at expanding their land by the simple belief that if you did not come from the Greek or Roman world, you were a barbarian. Mm. And in doing that, enabled them to set up colonias. What they did was they set up soldiers settling into farms. That was a way of payment off of their work as a legionnaire. And then they would put these retiring army veterans in the colonias, and it further Romanized the provinces. Now, the army veterans would go ahead and marry the population, and they would teach their wives Latin, and then they would also teach the surrounding villagers Latin. And then they also arranged the colony's infrastructure to be more Roman. They built roads, bridges, aqueducts, and sanitation. And they also had what was called a principia, which was the governance place. It was a civic building where governance took place. All law was performed. And it also had a carcer, or a prison. Carcer is where the term incarceration comes from.
Amazing. I might learn something that I thought I knew if I read your book in its entirety, for sure. Now, the book itself is, again, over 400 pages. I'm sure in writing this, it took, from what I understand, maybe up to 4 years to complete this from the research and the other things you wanted to do. Now, in writing this, did a creative idea come to you, maybe a scene or something that stood out in your creative thinking that you also shared on paper, and one that you feel might be a highlight to someone that reads your book?
Yes, yes. What I want everybody to know about is, I think it's chapter 3. It's called The Battle of the Isle of Mona. It's present-day Anglesey Island off of the coast of Wales. Now, what is cool about this chapter is it's dark and moody, and it is a highlight that I want to make because it shows the ruthlessness of the Romans when it comes to their taking over provinces. To the Romans, the Druids were problematic and considered fomenters of trouble. So it is filled with fighting Druids. Quintus and his Roman soldiers are fighting. There's a high-ranking tribune that is in there, and it gets grievously wounded. It's exciting, bloody, and sad, but it is an exciting thing to read.
You have thought about the idea of the Russians, I understand, maybe bombing the Vatican. How does that fit into the storyline?
Well, basically what they did was they took out this high druids, the high knowledge of all of the druids in Britannia, and it would be analogous to somebody bombing the Vatican for all Catholics.
Ah.
It took out the high druids that were adjudicating treaties, were religious, were teaching all of the druids, all of the religion. So it was very important that the high druids were there.
You've mentioned one other chapter that has to do with Market Day. How does that fit in, and why was that a favorite chapter of you as you were penning this adventure?
Okay, Market Day was fun because it was right after Boudicca's Rebellion. And I don't want to include Boudicca's Rebellion at this point because it's one whole chapter and it's very involved. But needless to say, it was Boudicca's Rebellion made the people very uneven in how to respect one another. So Romans were seen as enemies, and the Celts were seen as downtrodden or losers, which is what they were. But anyway, getting back to Market Day, I have Banderas, who is a soldier's soldier. Now, when I was doing Banderas, I was thinking of the actor Jason Statham when I was describing him, and that's how he is. He's typical martial arts, just thinks about nothing but Rome. He's an army guy through and through, so he makes his way directly to a weapons cart. And at the weapons cart, he's talking about how the Celtic longswords were ineffectual at the Boudicca's Rebellion because the smaller Roman gladiuses had the day. And the people around him started listening, and they were getting really mad. And so they started growing a bigger crowd, and then a mob started. But I'll stop there.
Wow.
And you have to read the book.
Yeah. One of those cliffhanger comments, of course. You have, at the next juncture, if you were to be interviewed, let's say, by the local television news folks about your book and your venture as a novelist, how would you introduce this to someone and get them fascinated with the idea of becoming involved in the storyline?
Okay, I have two sentences. It's in the first century Britannia, the Roman centurion Quintus Agricolanus is sent to the village of Gospec. And he stumbles across a murder from an evil Samhain ceremony. Along the way, he meets and falls in love with Adana. But can she trust him after she finds out he killed her father and brother? Ooh.
Ooh, that'll get you going for sure. Now, the book is a historical novel adventure. There's lots of action in it. There's historical references.
Yes.
Is it similar to other books that you have read or come across, or do you feel it maybe stands alone as a unique work?
It stands alone because of the factual research I put into it. Like you said, it took me 4 years to finish, and actually it was kind of funny. When I turned it in, it was 32 chapters. When Archway Publishing got it, they got excited and said, "Do you realize you have enough for two books?" So that's why I've got the second sequel already finished.
Incredible. Incredible. The story takes place, again, in what century or what world
first
view?
Century.
First century.
First century.
Are
so
there
it's like 63 A.D. is the time.
63 A.D. Now, are there some words that maybe you would use to describe your novel or its characters that maybe will have a meaning to the reader?
Sure. The three words I would describe would be enlightening, exhilarating, and romantic.
Well, you've covered it all, I think. Is there anything that we haven't covered, or is there a challenging part to this book? Other than the 4 years of research, that had to have been very complicated, at least from my perspective. I have a short attention span, so anything beyond 15, 20 pages would just be very complicated and difficult for me to complete. Was there any other challenge?
It was wonderful. I was in heaven when I was writing it, because it was about the two things I love the most: Rome and England. So it's the two things I love the most. But what I ended up doing was, one of the challenging parts was writing too much, because I kept running across research that I wanted to insert, and then I would insert it, and there was like 20 pages would turn into 30 pages, would turn into 40 pages, and so I started to cut them back. Now, the good thing, the most rewarding part, was when I turned it in to my editors for reading. They would praise them, saying, I've got new themes going in there. I've got good writing illustratively, so I'm drawing a good picture. I've got good character development, so there's that all going for the book.
From my perspective, congratulations on completing this, the title of which is The Eagle in Green Man's Clearing. My author, A. L., those two initials, and O'Connor. Allison, where can my listeners get a copy of your book?
Barnes and Noble, or it's on Amazon.
Excellent. They can do a search under your name as an author, A. L. O'Connor, and find this book and the sequel. How soon will that be coming out, do you think?
Probably about the fall of 2021, or possibly the winter of 2021.
Ah, hedging it a little bit. I think you're doing more research, it sounds like. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story.
Thank you.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Congratulations on getting your book published. The effort you put into your work is truly commendable. But what's next? What will happen to all the knowledge you have worked so hard to acquire to produce your book? Here at TogiNet Radio, we can provide you a platform to keep your knowledge working for you through the power of podcast. The subjects our podcasts cover are as varied as the grains of sand on a beach. From life coaching, to military resources, to business success, even to the paranormal. We have a place for everyone. To get started on your next step, call Scott at 903-787-5880 or email him at scott@toginetradio.com. That's scott@toginetradio.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, West Bow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book title, Digging Deeper, The Devotional, a 30-day devotional for Digging Deeper, the Bible study. And joining me from Florida is its author, Reverend Florence Lundy. Welcome to the program, Florence.
Well, thank you, Jay. I'm honored to be here.
You have a fascinating background by looking at your credentials. You had a career in education. You worked in an inner-city hospital. You also decided to become a pastor or minister and founded a church. What motivated you to do that? What is your background? Where are you from originally, and how did you end up in Florida?
Okay, well, Jay, I was born in New York City. And I grew up in, as they call it today, the boogie down Bronx. I am Jewish. My parents are both Jewish. I am Jewish. And I accepted Jesus as my Messiah when I was about 21.
Fabulous.
What happened was I got polio as a child. I was 12 and a half. And I was severely, severely attacked. I wasn't supposed to live. The doctors told my mother that it's up to God. And my mother tells me that every religion represented amongst the nurses, the aides, and the doctors started praying in their own way. And I came out of the coma.
Amazing.
And I grew up, and I'm a wheelchair user. And I use a ventilator at night for breathing. And as I said, I met my Messiah when I was about 21.
Well, you maintained that faith connection for sure. It must have been a good vaccination when it took place.
Actually, I was alone in my bedroom,
Wow. Contemplating
how I was going to kill myself because I could not accept the disability. Back then, there was no Medicaid AID. There was no home attendance service. And at the age of 21, all I saw in my future was the nursing home. Being a college graduate, that was not acceptable. So I was going to kill myself. And I reached out to God. I said, God, help me. And at that moment, Jay, I knew that I knew that I knew that I knew that Jesus was the Messiah promised to the Jews.
Wow.
And there was a bright light in my room and a presence. And I thought it was my mother that walked in. And I didn't want her to see me in that depressed state. But it wasn't. It was the love of the Lord and his personal revelation to me.
Wow.
And I knew I needed to get psychiatric help. And if I didn't, I would physically be dead. So I went out and I told them. But, you know, being Jewish, I hope some of your audience can relate. You don't go tell your mother, hey, Ma, guess what?
Guess what, yeah.
Jesus is the Messiah. You don't do that. So I just went out, and my parents were watching TV, and I said, I need to talk to you. But yeah, dear, wait. You know how it is.
Uh-huh.
And I just burst into tears. And I went to see a psychiatrist. And, you know, the only thing he did that was good for me, he told me, you want to kill yourself, wait till tomorrow, because everything looks better in the daylight.
Wow.
And I did, and I didn't. Ah, yes. And so God is so good.
What a beautiful, beautiful story. I have had or have met some people. My wife and I have taken, I will call them, well, they're cruises, transatlantic stuff. My wife is a genius at finding deals, and I've met some people who were of the Jewish faith and tried to witness to them. It's difficult as a Gentile and as a Christian Gentile to try to share your passion or your introduction to who you feel the Messiah is and who they've been looking for as a culture.
It's very difficult. I cannot witness to Jewish people, period. They look at me like I'm a lunatic. They say, in Yiddish, the word for Gentile is goyim.
Yeah.
You let the goyim talk to you and twist your mind. You're stupid. And I just can't deal with that. So I am not called to witness to Jewish people.
There are some very, very effective ministers who are able to reach out to that community. Now, you have written this book. What motivated you to do so? This is a companion book, if I understand it.
Yes, yes. There are two books. One is a devotional, and the other is a Bible study book. Each Bible study is related to the devotional, and it is self-reflective and interactive. So it's a Bible study that will allow the reader to put scripture into their life. How does this scripture relate to your life? What does it mean to you? How do you see it? Write it in your own words. Have you ever experienced it? Which to me is the most important part, to apply the Bible to my life. You know, it's great to do, and I don't knock any of the scholastic work or anybody that is so brilliant that they need to know every little thing about the Bible. But at the end of the day, how do I live it? How do I put it into my life? So there are two books. The devotionals come out of my life situation, my unique perspective from a wheelchair on life, and how to cope with life. And for me, and I know for thousands others, the answer is the Lord Jesus. That he comes into your life, gives you the joy, the peace, the love, the desire to live. Because when you're hurting and you're frightened and you're not like everybody else and the world says you're not worthy, he tells you, I love you no matter what.
Very encouraging.
And I hope that in these devotionals I've shared that, or at least a portion of it. I know that there are some topics in the book that are really important for today. Today everybody is going through COVID.
Mm-hmm.
There's no great big secret. And we're all frightened, and as I told you before, I know this one lady hasn't left her apartment in 6 months.
Wow.
At all. She's so frightened. I take vignettes from my life and apply it. For example, the first chapter is overcoming fear. And I speak about a helicopter ride.
Oh, yes.
I say, I don't know if you've ever been in a helicopter. Oh, it was so frightening. It was my first and last helicopter ride. And I did not know that when the helicopter turns, it goes over on its side.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that. So we're on the side. And I'm saying, okay, close your eyes. You can get through this. So I close my eyes, and I feel tears coming down my cheek. That's how petrified I was.
Hmm.
Petrified. And I said to myself, okay, Lundy, you got through polio. You could get through this. Literally, those were my words. And when I think of today and I think of COVID, and I say to myself, okay, you got through polio. You can get through this. And I know God is in the middle. I know that. And I know that he was in the middle of the helicopter ride. I don't know what people are going through out there in the audience today. Maybe their child is sick and the doctors gave up hope. Maybe they lost their job and they don't know where their next meal is coming from. But whatever is happening in their life, my life, your life, that causes you to fear, you have to know that it's not and has never been from God. It is and will always be a direct attack from the enemy. And how do I know this, Jay? Because the Word tells me that God does not want us to live in terror, dread, or riddled with anxiety.
Mm.
He wants us to have peace. And his Word says that he gives peace if we keep our minds on him. Isaiah 26, verse 3. What a great promise.
Oh, it
is.
All
I have to do is think about Jesus. That's it.
That is
I get peace.
That's a hope that those who are faith foundationed people have. We can always turn to that hope, embrace our faith. In fact, I was just going to mention, I have had a pastor friend who said that, you know, God did not intend for us to fly because he said, lo, I am with you always. I don't know what that means. It's just a little side note. But you have 128 pages of wonderful devotional material, and it is encouraging personal observations and also deals with things that everyone can relate to, whether you are a passionate believer or a seeker. You have things like God's plan for your life, the word lights my way, getting a sound mind. That's definitely something that we can relate to, I'm sure. Have you received your miracle as your last entry in this? What does that deal with? Your chapter deals with a snowstorm in New York City.
Yes. We were driving home, and we couldn't see the ice. And all of a sudden, the van skidded on the ice and started tipping over.
Hmm.
As I saw the highway coming closer and closer to me, I was terrified that we were going to die. And there was absolutely nothing we could do to save ourselves. People in the Northeast and the Northwest, no ice. They understand that when you're on ice, you just slip. The car goes one way, and it's horror. And at that point, I really literally saw the highway come up to me because we were going down to it. And the only thing we could do was to call on the Lord. We needed him, the one who calms the winds and the waves, to stop us from falling. In short, we needed a miracle.
Hmm.
And I screamed, Jesus. And Jay, at that moment, the car started righting itself back up on the wheels. And we were sitting sideways on the highway. And there was no car coming at all to hit us in any way. I don't know what situation you need a miracle for. You need a miracle because you've got stage 4 lung cancer? I don't know. But what I do know is that in the midst of the storm, the only one that could help is Jesus. That we have to have faith that he delivers and protects. And it's easy to say, have faith and trust God. I mean, that's so easy to say. But when the storms of life hit, do we panic or do we ask the question, Jesus, you are the one who calmed the winds and the waves. Who are you? Are you God? Yes, you are. Your word says you are. And that I believe you for a miracle. Now, Jay, the miracle could be on this side of heaven. The person with stage 4 lung cancer could be healed today, breathe normal, and go on for another 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Or the miracle could be on the other side. You know, I always tell people, they say, well, how come God hasn't healed you? Which is a favorite indictment of the Lord.
Right.
Of people. And I say to them, you know, I've gone to prayer more times than you are old, which is true. And each time the Lord says to me, as he said to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. Had it not been for this wheelchair and the polio, Jay, you and I would not be talking today.
Mm.
I would not have written these books. I would not have this type of life. And you know, Jay, it's easier to roll into heaven than to walk into hell.
Beautiful.
I prefer that.
Beautifully said.
So I give God all the glory for everything that's happened in my life. I give him the glory for these two books. Plus, I've written a third book, my very first book, called God's Word for You, which is totally a devotional book, and it ministers. I've had people who call me and say, I've read your book 4 times. I can't get over it. It's so wonderful.
Florence, this is
That's my baby.
This is a
These
wonderful.
These two are fabulous.
Yes, Florence, this is a wonderful testimony of faith and endurance. It's a devotional guide that deals with things that all of us can relate to, but especially in honor of you who has dealt with a severe physical disability and put her trust in God to bring her through life. Those incidences in life that have reinforced your faith certainly come through in this book, Digging Deeper, the devotional, a 30-day devotional for Digging Deeper, the Bible study. My guest author has been Reverend Florence Lundy, L-U-N-D-E. Florence, where do my listeners get a copy of this?
They can get a copy on Amazon or from Westbow Press.
Fabulous. And they can do a search under your name as well, not only for this book, but the way it sounds and with your positive outlook and faith. I believe there'll be something else that you'll be sharing with the audience in the near future. Thank you for sharing your story and your inspiration for us. I think this is a book that most who are faith-based in their life will enjoy, but also would inspire others and perhaps lead them to accept the same faith walk that you have embraced. Listeners, if you'd like to reach out and be in contact with the author, her email address is godswordforyou, spelled out, and the number 1, at gmail.com. And also the website is Florence, F-L-O-R-E-N-C-E, Lundy, L-U-N-D-E.com. Again, the book title, Digging Deeper, the devotional, and my guest has been Reverend Florence Lundy. Thank you, Florence, for sharing your story.
Well, thank you, Jay, for having me.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Girlfriend It is on TogiNet, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, with your hosts Patty Wyatt and Lisa Jernigan. This show is your chance to share, learn, laugh, and connect with other women. The Girlfriend It principle was born out of loss.
Lisa had recently had her mother pass away from cancer, and my mom was murdered. A man just walking into a room and started a 23-second shooting spree.
I think one of the things we both realized going through those tragedies that you can be extremely okay and be extremely sad.
Check out girlfriendit.com
and then be a part of Girlfriend It, the radio show, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central.
You know, your boyfriend or your husband or whatever, they don't totally understand that emotional side to a woman like another woman does. And I think that's so important just to have somebody that you go, she gets me.
Check out the website, girlfriendit.com. Don't miss Girlfriend It with Patty Wyatt and Lisa Jernigan, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book title is Ransom Notes, Moments of Reflection, Courage, Encouragement, Worship, and Humor. And joining me is the author who has written this wonderful work, and she joins me from Illinois, Catherine Ann Ransom. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jay. It's nice to be invited to share.
This is a fascinating work because it's 298 pages. Most first-time authors or first-time published authors don't have a work that's this inclusive. What is this book about, and how did you come to write it?
I began writing essays for an adult class at church that I was teaching. I tried to write essays about real-life things that were sort of caught my attention, and I was doing them every week, every Sunday, and a number of people suggested that maybe I should try and publish them. Not being very courageous, I put that off, but finally decided to leap into the water, test the swimming, and see what would happen. And the next thing you knew, someone invited me to write a book.
It's well done.
And as I started collecting pages, they just got longer and longer.
It's beautiful because there are photos and illustrations, and I will say this about your book, and it is obviously that way in the title. You don't look at life totally as a negative journey, but one that has humor and really is based on reality. Is that the way to describe it?
I think those are two great words. I try to find unusual things that catch my attention in life, whether it's some stupid thing I've done as an 85-year-old or something fun I've seen, something unusual that appears in writing or in real life, and work backwards. For example, I just wrote this week one on a friend of mine who climbs the Colorado Mountains at 14,000 feet, scaling those rocky sides. And I loved the pictures that he had sent as a young man and decided, what could I say about that event that then tied into the Christian life? And obviously there were lots of connections as one tries to prepare to be a rock climber. You don't just start out the first day. And the same thing is true with a Christian. You don't start the first day, you become a Christian being a incredible, knowledgeable person about everything there is to know. You grow.
I love your first chapter. Is your life a wreck? If yes, so what? I've heard people say, in fact, I heard a pastor this past week as I was watching a televised version of his ministry, and he was commenting on things that we as humans negatively say, and his response to that was basically the same as what you have commented on in your first chapter. So what? You know, get over it. Is that sort of the message of that first chapter?
Absolutely. And basically that tries to reflect my whole life and attitude, is that sad and bad and uncomfortable things happen to everyone, but try to look on the full half of the glass as opposed to the empty, if we use cliches. It's just more fun to do that, and I try to be encouraging. There's enough discouragement in life today, and I do have sort of a silly streak of humor, so I try to sneak that in so that maybe somebody will mildly chuckle or even actually laugh out loud.
It's obvious from conversations, although you have commented that you are in your 80th decade. It's hard to believe. What did you do prior to deciding to become an author? What is your background that prepped you for this?
I was in public education and began teaching in an elementary school here in Springfield, Illinois. Moved on to being a consultant with the school textbook company, then came back and was in charge of the reading program for the Springfield Public Schools, and at retirement started doing national consulting. So I had lots of chances to talk, and women love to talk, I think. And so I sort of practiced putting together speeches, and I guess maybe that's where the storytelling aspect came in my life.
Incredible storytelling is part of your history, and certainly I can tell you enjoy interaction with people. You have a chapter titled, or a heading title, Southpaw Assassinates Fat King. It's like a news release. What is that about?
That's Eglon and the king. When someone comes in and pretends he wants to visit with the king, but needs to get rid of him, so he stabs him in his large tummy. It's interesting you talk about that one. It's the one story, one essay, that I had to take out a little bit of detail. They said it was too bloody because I had said that they had stuck his hand clear into his, until it was embedded in his tummy. And so I had to revise it a bit, but it's a great story, and then we tried to make application. So some of the essays are based totally on a Bible story, and others are based on things I just see.
Your reader, the person that is going to gravitate to this book and this series of essays, how would you describe them?
Well, I think they need to at least have some interest in spiritual things, although not necessarily, and hopefully they could be a witness. I would say they would tend to probably be 20 or 30 years older or plus, because that's when you start thinking more about your life and in a little more serious way and in a different way. I think they need to have some sense of humor, because mine is a bit subtle, and I don't want someone to mistake it. You don't have to laugh out loud, but you need to be willing to sort of think a bit about a challenge, because almost every essay I try to leave some minor challenge or thought-provoking idea for people to reflect on during that week.
Over what period of time were these essays accumulated? How long ago did you start writing these and then decide to publish?
I think it was about in 2006 or so when I started writing the first ones, and they were sort of short. I was experimenting with the art of writing, and then they continued, and then the book was published first part of 2019, I think it actually came out. And then I could just continue. I probably have another 100 plus ready to go if I get up courage enough to write a second book.
Oh, amazing. And how long does it take to write an essay? Is this something that, from an inspirational standpoint, takes just a few minutes, a few hours? Do you have to overthink it, or just write it out and get it ready to share?
Well, some obviously fall together more quickly. I have a stack on the left-hand side of my desk here of thoughts. I may be in a concert. I was in a symphony concert once, hearing a concerto, and suddenly ideas came, so I'm writing notes on the program bulletin. Sometimes they go together much more quickly. Right now on my computer, I have 5 essays in process. Some you just want to write right away and the whole thing goes together, and others may take several weeks. I have to sometimes work to find a photo or a picture, because on my weekly ones, they always have a picture. In the book, we were unable to get a picture for everyone because I couldn't get permission to use some of the pictures. Most of them I have taken myself of the photos, so it's no problem getting permission. But anyway, so you have to put the whole pieces together.
Your style of writing, again, is one that's engaging and not preachy, I wouldn't say. I think it's more thought-provoking than anything else would be the way I would describe it. One of the essays, Chatty Cathy, Surprise Findings, according to headline in Condé Nast Traveler, on February 2016, Oregon is the fastest-speaking state in the United States. States of America. That is a curious title and content. What was the reasoning behind that, and what would be the moral of that particular story?
Well, I was born in Portland, Oregon. When I first came to Springfield to teach, it was the days of the doll called Chatty Cathy.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps your listening audience has already gathered that I enjoy chatting and talking and being engaged with people. So you can predict they started calling me Chatty Cathy at the school where I was teaching. Then I read this piece about that Oregonians are some of the fastest speaking people in the world or in the U.S. And I thought, oh, well, that makes sense. I was Oregonian beginning, and I have the name Cathy, so perhaps that's indeed why. And then the point being, I believe, and I don't remember exactly what I said, but we obviously need to be willing to talk about our faith, to share it, to not be bashful, and each of us can express our faith in different ways. I happen to be outgoing. I'm not afraid to say something, but you also can demonstrate your life by just things that you do and how you react to people. I also comment that you don't have to be fast speaking. You can be slow speaking or just enter, but you just cannot not share the word, because that's God says, or the scriptures say, go into all the world and preach the gospel. He doesn't say, go into all of the world, you who are fast talkers.
Hmm.
It just says, go. And I think too often today, especially, we're so eager to be kind and neutral and accepting, and we must be, but we're sometimes afraid to take a little bit of a stand and say, but this is what I believe, or this is what I do, or have you checked this out? So underlying, I don't want to be preachy, but I do want to get a message to help us be more brave and willing to share and not just be a secret disciple.
Excellent, excellent advice. You have been on this journey all of your life, or has this been something that is that occurred later as an adult?
No, I became a follower at a very young age. I was probably 8 or so. Obviously, I wasn't writing essays at 8, but I spent a couple of years in one of our preacher training colleges, and then I went on to Missouri State University in Springfield, Missouri, to get my teacher degree. Later got my master's over at the University of Illinois. And so I have a real mixed background, but I've been an active Christian absolutely all of my life. And I give great thanks to my mother, and there is an essay in that book of where I give credit to her for her witness. And she was much less talky than I am. She was more quiet, but she helped everybody in her purview. I've tried to match that as much as possible. My dad was much more quiet. I don't know where I got my talkativeness.
I'm happy that you still are not only active but motivated in your faith, because it encourages those of us who maybe sometimes feel like we're standing on the sidelines, either applauding or watching the race go by. You've done a wonderful job on this, 101 different essays in a book of almost 300 pages. It's wonderfully done, again, with photos and humor and a little bit of everything, titled Ransom Notes, My guest author, Catherine with a K, Anne Ransom, R-A-N-S-O-M. That's a clever title and a clever reason for using it. Were there challenges that you didn't anticipate in getting this published, or is it something that you are proud of the way it's come together?
Well, that's yes, yes. there were some problems as we did. I was not an author. I had great trouble getting the photos to go in. I needed lots of help in some of the technical aspects. Marketing has been an extreme challenge for me because I'm more interested in the writing. But I've had fun doing it. So, yes, I had some challenges.
You've done a wonderful job. Again, the title, Ransom Notes. Where can my listeners get a copy of this?
Amazon carries it. Barnes & Noble carries it. Or if you write me, I have 200 copies sitting in my basement that my housemate says we can give away at my funeral because I probably won't get rid of all the copies. But if somebody contacts me, I can certainly mail them a copy.
They can find you again by doing a search online under Catherine Ann, without the E, Ransom, and the title of the book, Ransom Notes. Catherine, do you have a final word of inspiration for my listeners?
Yes, that I really, truly believe that senior citizens still have great potential and a responsibility to be witnessing and doing and not just sitting in their rocking chair. We have to share the gospel. We've had all of these opportunities to learn and to make mistakes, but now is our time to share that faith. And sitting and doing nothing is not the option. So I try to work that theme into many, many of the essays as I go along.
It's important to understand as a human that regardless of your age, it ain't over till it's over. And that's a very strong foundation of faith that needs to be shared around the world.
Well, even as an 85-year-old, I think that's what I can still do. I can't go out and climb mountains and maybe be a missionary in a foreign country, but I can still sit at my computer and share the word.
Listeners, if you do a search online, they'll be able to locate you and any other publishing that may come in the future. I would highly recommend this, and I have a feeling if I was pastoring a church, I might sneak some of these illustrations into my sermon outline because they certainly have a poignant and pointed message in many regards, and certainly something that all of us can benefit from reading and hopefully being challenged and amused by your observations of life. 101 different essays, 298 pages, the title Ransom Notes. Thank you, Kathy, for joining me today and sharing your story.
You're welcome. I've had fun.
Honored to visit with you today. For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing. Join us again next week at noon Eastern.